This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly, our last show of the 2024 season. Two more games to play. Today against the Tigers and Sunday's final game of the regular season, also against Detroit. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly this morning. And White Sox fans, you can get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Been a little bit since we've had a morning edition of White Sox Weekly. Hopefully you've all had the requisite cups of coffee. We're working on that here ourselves. Big thanks to our producer, Jack McGrath, who's going to be working quite a bit during this show. We've got a lot of audio that we want you to hear from the White Sox, specifically general manager Chris Getz, Paul Janisch, who's on the player development side. The White Sox had a Double-A championship in Birmingham. You'll hear from Sergio Santos, the manager of that ball club, a guy who would like to be the manager of the Chicago White Sox in 2025. We'll talk about that as we go, too. But the story of the season, the story of the show today, of course, another loss for the White Sox yesterday, a 4-1 final to the Tigers, and that makes it 121 on the season. The White Sox are 39-121. They now have secured the most losses in a regular season in the modern era of Major League Baseball, surpassing the number set by the 1962 Mets. It's true that the 1899 Cleveland Spiders lost a few more ball games, but the rules were different in that era, and I'm not sure that the rule of law was really even the same. The owner of the Cleveland Spiders, had a couple of players that they wanted transferred to the St. Louis Browns franchise, so they just shipped them on over there, and that actually began a clause in Major League Baseball's rules that essentially disallowed what they called syndicate ownership, owners being able to be invested in multiple teams and causing all of that kind of stuff. That's the history lesson for the morning, though, I promise. No more of that. We're looking toward the future because it's got to be brighter than where the White Sox are, wins and losses-wise, right now. It had been a couple of weeks now, I think, since White Sox fans have realized that 121 losses and potentially more, of course, with two games left to play. We'll see what the Tigers show up with today after clinching a playoff spot for the first time since 2014 last night. Videos of the celebration have come out in that clubhouse. And, you know, with the improbable run that the White Sox went on, the Tigers went on here this season and got themselves to the playoffs, Detroit, the entire city, deserves themselves one heck of a celebration last night. And if they're waking up just a little bit later than normal for this afternoon's ball game, I wouldn't be surprised, not even a little bit. Sarah Langs, who's an excellent researcher for MLB.com and MLB Network, put out a couple of tweets about the improbability of two specific teams making the playoffs that have punched their cards, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. Still, you know, knowing that 121, knowing that surpassing 120 was a likelihood for the White Sox, having lost 2 of 3 to the Angels in Anaheim 2 weeks ago, or last week, I should say, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the Sox won that first game 8-4. They were shut out 5-0 and then lost 4-3 in 13 innings against the Angels. They were swept by the Padres and then swept the Angels themselves. You know, it was pretty wild. That series in Anaheim was, I'll be honest, fairly poorly played baseball in 2 of 3 games. The White Sox actually played a good one in that first game of the series, having won 3 in a row. They took 2 of 3 from Oakland. They won that opener in Anaheim, and then just some ugly stuff on the 17th and 18th, that 5-0 loss and that 4-3 loss in 13 innings. The Padres are a very good ball club, and they showed it with a whole lot of power some clutch hitting and some good pitching too in that sweep in San Diego. And then when we got to Guaranteed Rate Field on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, you know, you're kind of looking at that matchup going, well, the Angels didn't look all that great at all in Anaheim, and the White Sox may have, you know, underplayed them or left a few opportunities specifically in that 13-inning game on the board. But these are two teams really struggling to kind of find what is their identity here in 2024, or maybe if their identity is giving opportunities to players that they see as parts of the long-term future who are perhaps a little bit overmatched by some of the major league talent that they're going to see, then so be it. You know, that kind of is what happens for teams that are out of the playoffs late in September. You know that. But the White Sox played some decent baseball. They certainly survived a rock fight in Wednesday's game, that 4-3 walk-off winner. There were some big mistakes by the Angels in game one of that series. A dropped pop-up led to a three-run White Sox eighth inning. It was their first comeback of the 2024 season. The White Sox were 0-94. When trailing after seven, and Tuesday night's win was the very first of the season. 1-94 are the White Sox when trailing after seven this year. They get themselves a sweep. They have won, they will have won five in a row at home to end the 2024 campaign. And in a year where the home record was, you know, really, really bad, it's at least good to go out at Guaranteed Rate Field with some wins. Now, there were some mixed emotions in those games at Guaranteed Rate Field, and I suppose we could talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But when the season ends with the number in the right-hand column for the White Sox at whatever it's going to be, hopefully just 121, and the Sox can, you know, take this series against Detroit when they're going to get themselves all set up for a playoff run, it may look just a touch better. But at the end of the day, this is a team that has lost more games in Major League Baseball's history than any other modern era team. We're going to hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz at the top of the hour. And he spoke with White Sox beat reporters when that series opened against the Angels and had a lot to say about the future direction of this ball club, what's here, what's in place now, and what needs to be put into place. The White Sox new front office, led by Getz and Brian Bannister and Jin Wong and Paul Janisch on the farm side of things, and others too, it has seemingly been really focused on establishing foundations all over the place, whether that be in the minors or abroad in the Dominican, in Dominican Republic, I should say. Those sorts of things are necessary foundations to set. As Getz has pointed out, the White Sox as a franchise have not been where they wanted to be relative to the rest of Major League Baseball in some of those places. They sound like they want to widen their analytics department a little bit. There will obviously be the search for the new manager of the ball club who will have a whole lot to say of what needs to be done once players reach the major league level. And I think that's going to be the biggest focus from me when we watch and we kind of hear the reports and hear the names of the managers the White Sox are interested in hiring for 2025 and beyond, right? The guy that's going to begin to shape this organization from the on-field perspective. And I think as you look back through the past few years, what has been very clear is that some of the things the White Sox have endeavored to set as benchmarks for what needs to be done, how they need to know how to play, getting a better defense put together, throwing to the right bases from the outfield, all those kinds of things, that's been talked about quite a bit, but unfortunately has not been accomplished at the regularity, you know, with the kind of repetitiveness that it needs to happen at the big league level to win games on the margins. And I think when I look back at some of the disappointments of the 2024 season, one of the things that really stands out to me, and hopefully is something that Chris Getz in the front office is going to get right here in 2025, knowing what they know now, you know, having, you know, taken a swing at this team this season and now having to revamp and remove just a little bit, they wanted to be much better defensively in 2024. So players like Paul DeJong and Dominic Fletcher were brought in, amongst others. Martin Maldonado, you know, the catching situation was shored up just a little bit to provide a bit more of backstop for the backstop Corey Lee, for a guy who it was in his first major league season and seemingly getting better in most facets of the game, but definitely needed some help along the way. And I think some of that has been accomplished. But I also, you know, you look at some of the all of the defensive numbers, and the White Sox underperformed wildly defensively this year in the first half of the season and into, you know, just I would say probably the beginning of August or so. And it wasn't until Luis Robert Jr. got back into center field, you know, injuries affected this, of course. They have for the White Sox for years now. And that's part of every major league franchise. But when you look at the up the middle defense, Robert's a huge part of that. And teams talk about being solid up the middle constantly, and not having Robert there and having the season that Martin Maldonado had at the beginning of the year certainly didn't help in terms of the up the middle defense. But when Robert got back, at least defensively, when Dominic Fletcher re-arrived from the minor leagues, as you've seen better and better shortstop play from guys like Jake Amaya, as you've seen Brian Ramos take some strides defensively at third base, and, you know, Brooks Baldwin, who is on the injured list and seemingly going to end the year on the injured list. We'll talk about Brooks in a little bit as well, but that defense got a little bit better. And in some cases, specifically Dominic Fletcher, got elite out there in right field. So I think in pivoting a bit, as the White Sox have had to do in terms of their plan for players after the trade deadline and as the September rosters expanded, they've, you know, sorted out some of the things they were unable to sort out, or at least reapplied some players to different positions or different allotments of playing time. That's given them the opportunity to be better defensively. And I think perhaps in 2025, since we don't exactly know where the White Sox are going to go as it regards Robert and Crochet and the trades that might be offered from other teams, there are some solutions that have that are younger than some of the ones they brought in this last offseason, and that have made the steps necessary to be a better defensive ball club. On the offensive side of things, it has been, you know, a wildly disappointing and underperforming and injured season for the White Sox. Of course, Yoan Moncada is on the bench and back, but, you know, just obviously has not been a factor all season long. Luis Robert Jr. has been in a really tough funk since coming back from his injury. There have been isolated weeks, I suppose, or maybe even 4 or 5 day stretches, less than that, where Robert has kind of looked like the all-star Robert of last season, but it's not been there for the most part. Corey Lee had a good first half of the season, and has since, I think, you know, you're going to deal with that first full season as a catcher. We talk often about how the catching position needs a little bit longer to cook, to bake, and whether that's in the minor leagues, and Corey certainly had some time there with Houston, or in the bigs, it can take some adjustments. And I think when you hear the phrase development is not linear, it may apply to catching perhaps more than most other positions. And while Corey's made strides defensively and remains one of the better arms as it regards the base running game, you know, shutting down steals and all that kind of stuff in baseball, it has been better come blocking and framing. The offensive side, I think, will probably come next for Corey. We've seen him be capable in the first half of producing some solid offense relative to the catching position all around baseball. So, you know, that's kind of, as I look at it, this offense, sure, this team can get better defensively and has some solutions for it, but this offense has been the biggest underperformer in all of baseball this year. And it's unfortunate, because some of the places that you wanted to get performances from, the White Sox could have looked to make some trades, or in the trades that they did made, could have had some bigger returns, had guys like Eloy Jimenez or Yoan Moncada stayed healthy and more productive. Who knows what the marketplace would have looked like for Luis Robert Jr. had he not gotten hurt and played well. If the White Sox wanted to make that move, that certainly would have been a player, had he been playing like last season, that would have gotten a whole lot in return. And that is where the White Sox are at, you know, in this rebuild, looking to trade current assets for some players that are going to be around for the longer term and be more valuable for the White Sox in 25 and 26 and 27 and 28. That's where the Sox are right now. It is as clear as ever, having lost their 121st game last night to the Tigers, and it will be we will hold the franchise to those expectations that we do for teams that are putting themselves back together as opposed to, you know, teams that are pushing in. Again, you're going to hear from general manager Chris Getz in just a little bit here on the show. I think I want to go back to last night's ball game a little bit, because one of the most amazing stories of 2024 has been the emergence of Garrett Crochet as one of the game's best left-handed pitchers. And while it looked different in the second half than it did in the first, obviously, Garrett Crochet last night and in his second-to-last start against the Padres got back to that dominance and also changed the recipe for that dominance a little bit. You'll hear from Grady Sizemore. You'll hear from Garrett Crochet when we come back. White Sox and Tigers coming up at 12:10 this afternoon. Our pregame show at 11:30. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 of the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Sox and Tigers coming up this afternoon, a 12:10 start. Our pregame show gets going at 11:30. Looking forward to watching a start from Sean Burke. We'll talk about Burke a little bit later on in the show, but my goodness, has he been fun to watch. I mean, the velocity's been there. The stuff has been there. The mound presence, the kind of feel out there that you want to see, well, that's absolutely arrived. And, you know, just to, I guess the Cliff Notes version of what we'll talk about later as it regards the future of White Sox pitching is, I know that guys like Nick Nastrini and Kai Bush and Davis Martin and Jonathan Cannon have all made starts this season, and many more starts than Sean Burke will have had after he offers one against the Tigers this afternoon. But when you look at, when you go to baseballreference.com, you can, you know, the top 12 players in wins above replacement pops up there. They've got their photos and everything like that. Eric Fetty is the leader for the White Sox in wins above replacement. And he left after a great first half, traded to the Cardinals, and finished out pretty good with St. Louis after some bumps in the road when he got started in St. Louis. But number two is Garrett Crochet at 4.1. Number three is Jonathan Cannon at 1.9. And remember, two things that I'll offer about wins above replacement, usually, is that, one, it is not an end-all, be-all stat, and I don't purport it to be that way, and you should be really wary of people who do tell you that wins above replacement is the end-all, be-all stat. It's not. It got a little overblown in the middle of the last decade, but it is a good, like, thumbnail measure of how good a player's been relative to his peers. It is also kind of a snapshot in time a little bit, right? And it's a counting stat. It's a little bit like home runs, right? The more you play, the more opportunity you have to accumulate wins above replacement. So for that reason, when you scroll down to the 10th highest wins above replacement for the White Sox in 2024, and you see Sean Burke, who has made two starts and one relief appearance and will get his third start today, it's a little bit, it's crazy. It's a little bit crazy that that guy who's pitched so little has pitched A, well enough to get on a leaderboard, and B, doesn't have enough competition to keep him out of a top 12, having just made, you know, like 25, 28 innings or so after today's start. Anyway, with all the guys that we've seen make starts this year, and I want to make sure I didn't forget, you know, the young players that we saw make starts this year, Davis Martin, Jonathan Cannon, Kai Bush, Nick Nastrini, those dudes, right? Sean Burke, in half as many, a quarter as many starts as any of them, really looks like a guy that makes sense in a starting rotation as much as any of them. And that's a very good thing for the White Sox, at least as we sit here today, September 28th, 2 days from the end of the season. The other guy you'd love to see in a rotation, and we'll see if the White Sox keep him or if they're looking to trade Garrett Crochet. He spoke to White Sox beat reporters couple of days ago, final game of the homestand, final game of the home schedule 2024. Just kind of about the overall feel here for the White Sox prior to them losing last night and his general sense of where things are going come the offseason.
Yeah, what's realistic or what are expectations? I don't know. I mean, that's, I think, what every pitcher expects out of himself is seven shutty every night. But that kind of goes back to also what I was saying. It's like as pitchers, we're extra honed on the perfectionism because it's like I know that I could paint this fastball. Like I've done it 100 times. I just did it in my warm-ups. So it's like why can I not throw that pitch every single time? So it's just it's a constant chase of or a constant strive to be better. But yeah, as far as expectations, I don't know. I already hold myself to a pretty high standard, so I'm not too worried about that.
Would you be receptive to long-term such approaches, winner, or are you pretty much thinking this is it?
I'd be receptive. That you know, those kind of conversations aren't. They're not, I guess, like reliant on myself. You know, whatever happens, I know the kid does everything with the team's best interest in mind. So I think that we can trust that to remain true.
But people would ask me then, why would you want to stay? Because you know the rebuild is going to take a little while here.
I like the pieces that we have. You know, I like the relationships that I've developed with this staff. You know, I've got a lot of trust in Getz, and I think that so does everybody in our clubhouse. It's now just a matter of, you know, letting our young guys kind of develop and continue to get reps.
That's Crochet just the other day. Crochet also briefly spoke after the start last night. He went four innings, struck out six, gave up just one walk and four hits. Here's Crochet after the game last night.
No real emotions. Obviously, it sucks. But I mean, we put ourselves in this position, you know, early on. We had a bad April. We just never dug ourselves out of that hole. You know, we're where we are because of the way that we played, which sucks. But that's just, you know, that's all it is.
Just playing, you know, Tigers team, clinching the playoff spot, you know, in front of a packed house, kind of underscore where you guys want to be down the road.
Yeah, it's tough watching them celebrate out there when that was us just a couple years ago, but it is what it is.
Yeah, to have both happen in that same game, you know, setting a record for the most losses and watching the Tigers clinch a playoff spot. The AL side of the bracket is set, by the way. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Certainly tough. We'll play one more for you before our next break and before getting into Chris Getz's comments prior to the sweep of the Angels at Guaranteed Rate Field. We'll hear from Grady Sizemore in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here for station identification. Wrapping up the audio files from last night's loss to the Tigers, White Sox interim manager Grady Sizemore spoke to reporters after the ballgame. Here he is.
Yeah, I thought he looked great. Another great performance, you know, just hell of a year. You know, I think he exceeded expectations and, you know, proved himself that, you know, he's one of the top guys in the league. Just another great performance. Yeah.
What was the conversation like with the final out?
Oh,
we're about to pull him.
Oh yeah, I mean he was getting at his limit. You know, I went to talk to him. You know, we were obviously ready to make a move there, but you know, he wanted that last hitter. You know, I told him, okay, this is it, the last guy. You know, and he got the job done.
Did he talk you out of it, or what was
I mean, I went out there. Obviously, I wanted to read the situation. I wanted to see how he was feeling, where he's at, but also let him know, like, you know, if it's one more, it's one more. Like, this is it. I can't, you know, if we're already, you know, kind of at the limit, but I understand the situation. Bases loaded. You know, I think he wanted to get out of that champ, and he's earned it. You know, I was comfortable letting him go another one more hitter.
Is the message need to even be said, you know, you lose 121 while they celebrate? Isn't that like just like the lesson of the what we want in the future here? We want to be what they have.
I mean, obviously every year you come in, you know, with the expectation of making it to the postseason. Try not to relate our season to theirs in any way. But, you know, obviously, you know, it hasn't been our year. And you know, it's frustrating, you know, but we've been, you know, talking the last couple of months just really about what the focus is and not getting too caught up on the record itself and just trying to finish strong, you know, and build for next year and try to develop and just be a better team.
That's White Sox interim manager Grady Sizemore after the loss to the Tigers last night. We'll move from last night to the future. After this break, we'll hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz. He had a lengthy press conference with White Sox beat reporters prior to the last home series of the year. Talked a lot about what will be next for this franchise. We'll do that next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly, everybody. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Tigers starting up at 12:10 this afternoon. We got you for the morning until the pregame show at 11:30. Got a lineup out for this ball game as well. Miguel Vargas leads off for the White Sox. He'll play third base. Zach DeLoach is in right field. Andrew Benintendi is in left. No Luis Robert Jr. today. He was out of the lineup last night with some ribcage soreness. There were hopes that he'd be able to go today, but it sounds like he's going to wait at least one more to play in that final game of the regular season. Have not seen the latest or any other news, rather, from White Sox beat reporters yet. They'll speak with Grady in, I would imagine, probably 20, 30 minutes, something like that. So we'll let you know as soon as we hear something on that end. Let's see, where do we leave things off? Andrew Vaughn's going to hit three and be in that first base position. Lenin Sosa at second, and it'll be Brian Ramos as the designated hitter. Both Ramos and Vargas in the lineup today. Ramos, the DH. Dominic Fletcher gets that go in center field for Luis Robert Jr. Chucky Robinson catching the day game after a night game. Corey Lee had home plate last night. It'll be Robinson today. And Jake Amaya will be the shortstop for the White Sox. It'll be Bo Brisky starting the game for the Tigers. He is likely the opener, though he's been a starter in the past and has a bit more stamina than your typical opener does. Last night it was Brian Hanafy who went two innings. Brisky could go three or perhaps even four if he's really cruising. Of course, today's the hangover game for the Tigers. The American League side of the bracket is set. The Tigers are in, the Royals are in, and then you've got your division leaders in the Guardians, the Astros, and the Yankees, and the Orioles. I forgot, the Orioles are the top AL wildcard spot. So just like everyone predicted going into 2024, three AL Central teams are in the playoffs. More on that in a little bit. White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke with reporters prior to the first game of the sweep of the Angels at Guaranteed Rate Field. There's a lot in this. We've cut it into two parts, and we'll talk about each important detail later on in the show. But without further ado, here is part one of general manager Chris Getz wrapping up the season with White Sox beat reporters.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. You know, obviously we're reaching the final stretch of the 2024 season. I certainly want to acknowledge, you know, the record that we're up against right now. And I think it's really important to do a heartfelt thanks to our fans that have been with us through this very difficult, painful season. They don't deserve this. It's been very trying for me personally and our staff and everyone in this organization. Our fans certainly don't deserve to go through anything like this. I know that they pay money to come to games and watch games. They look to watch the Chicago White Sox as a positive outlet, and we haven't been able to provide, you know, too many positive outcomes throughout the season. So it's certainly my job and others now to, you know, focus more so on the future, learn from the past, and start building towards where the White Sox deserve to be for our fans and everyone that works here. Now, with that all being said, there certainly were some difficult decisions that we have had to make throughout the year. And you know, those decisions perhaps did not help the 2024 season, and they were more focused on the future of the organization. My hope is that we are not faced with those types of decisions too often in the future, but that certainly has led to certainly a lot of the struggles that we have endured this year. I feel very good about where we're at with the front office. We're quickly going to put most of our focus towards hiring the next manager for the Chicago White Sox. I feel really good about the process that we've built out. We've got a long list of candidates and look forward to eventually hiring the next leader for our dugout. That's going to represent not only the an extension of the front office, but lead our players, lead our organization towards better days ahead.
Chris, how much would it be bad luck for you guys going from maybe 95 to 100 losses to where you're at now? How much would you play into that when you have your internal discussions about what didn't go right this year?
Well, I can focus on some of the things that didn't go right. And if there's something to learn from those shortcomings, you certainly want to take that information and use it for making better decisions in the future. There's always a variance of outcomes that could happen at a major league club based on wins and losses. Now, with that being said, you know, we're deeply focused on the foundational pieces of the organization. We're in the process of revamping our international department. We've made a lot of changes to player development. We're making changes on our analytic group. We've made changes with our pro group. And obviously, we've got the big change at the manager position. So it remains fluid. We know that we still have areas that need focus and attention and need to pour even more into our infrastructure. We do feel like we've made major strides in 1 year. I look back at where we were at from a pitching standpoint in one season. The development and the steps forward we've made, I've been I'm very happy with. Obviously, on the offensive side, we need to look deeper and find ways to improve to balance out this organization so we can be a successful major league club.
Chris, we've asked the players this, and you addressed it a little bit in the opening statement, but with whatever purpose for the season, whether you're looking big picture, whether you're looking small, how tough is it to be attached to this record from this moment going on with the 120, maybe more losses?
Yeah, it's not something that anyone wanted to be associated with. And now, it wasn't the highest priority to avoid this record, quite honestly, because we were looking at the long-term health of the organization. I do want to compliment our players and the staff that we brought up here to help these players finish the season. I think culturally, the attitude and the effort has been really good, and that's because of Grady, that's because of some of the other coaches, and that's because of the players. I obviously they want more. They want to look up and see more wins in the column, just like our fans do. But when we made the change from Pedro in August, the goal was to get us to the finish line and find some wins along the way, and not necessarily just on the win-loss column, but to improve the effort, the play, and set us up for a better 2025.
But when you look at 2025, having 100 losses could happen again. I mean, fans are going to be restless no matter what you do.
Yeah, all of our focus is for the long-term health. I mean, we're clearly in a rebuild. When you've got this many losses, the one thing it does provide is clarity and direction on where you need to go as an organization. And, you know, there are situations that I think front offices have endured before where you're stuck in the middle perhaps, you know, you're stuck in mediocrity and you don't know how to get out of that. Where we stand right now, it's very clear that we've got some work to do, and the pathway out of that is to be healthy underneath the organization, and that's what we're determined to do. We're not going to take shortcuts. And it may take some time for us to reap the rewards at the major league level. Obviously, we'll go into this offseason and do what's best for, once again, the long-term health. You know, you've got free agent and an ability to go into the free agent market. You've got potential trade acquisitions. We're going to do everything we can to improve this major league club, but we're certainly not going to be short-sighted.
Chris, in hindsight, do you have any regrets, not in July, but November through January, in terms of, you know, sort of building a team so you weren't in this moment?
You know, those decisions that we made, whether it be an Aaron Bummer trade or a Dylan Cease trade, obviously very talented players. You know, the players that were acquired were not directly brought in to make us, you know, that much better in 2024. It was more 25 and beyond. It was to build our prospect capital to eventually be more successful at the major league club.
We're talking about free agency that obviously involves spending a lot of money. Are you guys prepared to do something like that, or could you be more specific?
Yeah, we haven't determined, you know, the level of free agency that we'll be working in. I can assure you that it won't be the top of the market, but there are going to be other opportunities to go out there and sign players to help us. You look back at the signings of an Eric Fetty and bringing in some of these other players that, you know, helped our major league club, but also we were able to trade these players and reinvest in the organization. So there's going to be those type of opportunities as well.
What have you noticed about players and also training during this
Yeah, I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Grady and the staff. Grady's temperament is exactly what we needed. It was very clear early on and has remained that the players have such a high level of respect for him, and that's because of the character that he has, how he communicates to players, how he supports players. The players have responded well. Obviously, they haven't necessarily had the statistical results or anything that has shown up maybe on the win and loss record, but the intent and the effort has been there, and that's a testament to both the players and Grady and the coaching staff.
You talked about the criteria of for your next manager. Could you share some of the things that you're looking for in the next step? We know it's outside of the organization, but what are some of the things that you're looking for in your next manager?
Well, we're looking for someone that understands the situation that we're presently in, that is up for the challenge. I'm looking for a partner in this to help lead this organization. That comes in different forms. You know, we've built out our criteria. You know, we've looked at the desired outcomes. We've got a deep candidate pool, and we'll work through that, and we'll find the best fit for us.
What about the player development aspect of this individual?
That is definitely going to be a strong component of what we're looking for the next manager, is the development of our players at the major league level. You know, I think when it comes to development of players, it certainly is something that needs to regularly be applied at the major league level, regardless of the state of an organization. Now, perhaps in this case, the development background and ability is going to be more meaningful.
Is Grady in consideration still? Do you look at him as a candidate?
Grady's in consideration. You know, he's you know, he has a lot of traits that we're looking for, but we certainly want to go through a full process before we make any sort of decision.
What's it been like for Jerry Reinsdorf? Because we don't get to talk to him. What's it like dealing with you? What's he been like? How difficult has this been for him?
It's been very difficult for him. You know, he feels the pain of the fans. He's not proud of the state of our major league club. Now, with that being said, he's been a tremendous support to me in the front office. He's listening. He's asking questions. And, you know, we're providing a plan for us to get out of this. And, you know, he shows up every day, and I love the conversations I have with him. More than anything, he's been tremendously supportive.
Is there any certainty in your mind about whether or not Eric Rocher will be on the roster when the next season rolls around?
You know, it's tough to answer that right now. I will say, and I've said this many a times, you know, the Garrett Crochet season has just been nothing short of excellent. You know, with going into this year and him not, you know, taking a start since his college days, And to make another start here late in September just speaks to his effort level, his determination, and I think that that's had a really positive effect to our clubhouse. You know, in the reality of the sport, you've got to assess where players are at contractually and look for opportunities to help the organization long term.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. More from him on the other side of a quick break here, but just in pointing out a couple of things, as he addressed the manager situation, they'll be looking, and they are looking right now. They've got a list of candidates. They've got a process, and you'll hear from a couple of people later on in the show here that are going to talk a little bit more about what that process, what they understand that process to be. But Grady Sizemore has earned an interview, it seems, through a couple of different things. Merit, one of them, and that merit includes just how much players on this White Sox roster have enjoyed the vibe, the feel, the support, the teaching that Grady Sizemore has been able to bring, the coaching that he's been able to bring to this team since the dismissal of Pedro Grifol. That's a good thing. It is also, you know, worthy to consider, and a lot of people have called in asking, you know, about whether Grady is going to be a candidate for this job, how serious a candidate Grady is for this job. And I suppose, I don't know that I'd put things necessarily that way. When they go out, when the White Sox go out on these interviews and they bring folks in and all this other kind of stuff, what needs to happen, and what will, from my understanding, is that each interview is going to be taken just as serious as the other, right? I mean, sure, they may have their favorites. It is now confirmed that Skip Schumacher, current manager of the Marlins, will only be the manager of the Marlins for two more days, today and tomorrow. He does not have an option on next year. He will be a free agent manager and will be highly sought after by every team. The White Sox and Reds are the only ones looking right now, but every team who is looking for a manager after this season is over. There will be other candidates, hotly considered, no doubt about it. There always are. But the White Sox have an opportunity here with this managerial hire, like they did with the Pedro Grifol hires before it. They have an opportunity to learn and glean from other organizations who have either gone through processes like the White Sox have, who want to lean on that player development side of the particular skill set that that manager might bring in, all that kind of stuff. And those are valuable interviews. Those are valuable processes to learn about what's gone on in other places. Because, you know, White Sox general manager Chris Getz has just elapsed 1 year of work here with the White Sox. And he's been pretty clear both in what he's said and how he's organized this front office and what he knows and what he needs other people, you know, what he needs to bring other people in to do that he doesn't know all that well. You know, guys like Brian Bannister and Jin Wong and that kind of thing. Those interviews need to follow that same kind of process, and I assume that they will. It's a huge opportunity for a franchise to learn and grow through all kinds of different interviews with all kinds of different candidates, and then emerge with the candidate they believe is the best, and perhaps be able to implement a couple of things that they heard along the way. It's all a very much a growth process that the White Sox are going to have to undertake here as they go about hiring this new manager. There's a lot more to go here with White Sox general manager Chris Getz. More on the player side of things, I think, when we come back. You're listening to White Sox Weekly, and we'll dive back into it next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. That's whitesox.com/flexpack. You know, we've been listening to part one of the Chris Getz press conference with White Sox beat reporters just before the sweep of the Angels earlier this week, the final three games at Guaranteed Rate Field. White Sox, having lost last night, set the record for most losses in a single season by a franchise, surpassing the 1962 Mets, who lost 120 in their inaugural season. So obviously that record is of some distinction. It is dubious in nature, and it is something that, as Chris said prior to even setting it, that the White Sox are not looking to repeat, of course. Now, I was looking around. We're going to play part two of this conversation just a little bit. We'll get back on time here for you as we get closer and closer to the 11:30 start of our pregame show for the White Sox and Tigers this afternoon at 12:10. The American League standings are set, or rather the playoff bracket is set. The Tigers are in. The Royals are in. The Orioles are in. The Yankees and Guardians and Astros, who are inevitable, are all in. One thing that's kind of caught my mind, or caught my brain, I suppose, over the last couple of weeks, despite the fact that the Royals have not been playing their best baseball all year, coming into September, the Kansas City Royals had the best batting average with runners in scoring position, particularly good at home. I want to say it was close to 300 with runners in scoring position at Kauffman Stadium when we were there coming out of the break earlier in July. The Royals lost 106 games last year, and with a new manager, Matt Quatraro, brought on last season, a new front office 3 seasons ago, if memory serves, some pivoting from some of, not all of, but some of the young core that they had begun to kind of put together at the big league level, and with some veterans in place in Salvador Perez and others in that roster, they've been able to get themselves back to the playoffs. They suffered an injury to first baseman Vinny Pasquantino, whose season has been, you know, up and down, but he's been an RBI guy, a run producer, a home run threat, and a decent on-base guy for most of the year. Pasquantino also, you know, when not only do you have to look at, you know, when injuries happen like this late in the season, and Pasquantino probably might make it back for the playoffs. We'd have to see. He's had that thumb injury. Anyway, you have to think about not only what the player who's been there has produced, but what the drop-off might be to the next guy, right? I mean, it's not just from one to the next. You have to think about the opportunity cost of losing Pasquantino in the first place. And to that end, the Royals have been able to deal with those injuries. They have been able to survive and thrive with the offseason pitching addition specifically that they were able to make and jump back from 106 losses last year to the playoffs this year. Now, when Chris Getz has talked about what next season, this winter, looks like, I don't know that, you know, and to be quite honest with you, I don't know that the free agent class this year is going to provide the same kind of depth, perhaps, that the Royals were able to take advantage of last year. But it does kind of feel like this may not be, or that there are roadmaps to getting yourselves back to competition from a season like the White Sox have had, because the Royals just did it. They did it in this division too. And I think that's instructive. I think that's important to keep your eye on. And yeah, it does sound like the White Sox are going to be playing in that kind of middle tier of free agency and looking for things that make sense both for the long term or could be pivoted around. They've got to make some decisions on Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr. this offseason as it regards the trade market. But I don't think that there's any reason that the White Sox can't be on some kind of same trajectory as the Royals, because they've been able to do it. And you've got a lot of pieces in this White Sox organization that understand how they did it, because in a lot of cases, they've been there not so long ago, and that could be a good thing going forward. We'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, get you all set up for part two of White Sox general manager Chris Getz's conversation with White Sox beat reporters. We'll get into more of the player side of things as opposed to the overarching system-wide stuff that we heard in part number one. So stay tuned. That's next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Tigers coming up here in just a little bit. A 12:10 start, an 11:30 pregame show, and you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be at the ballpark for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plan, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Part two of General Manager Chris Getz and his talk with White Sox beat reporters prior to the win against the Angels back on Tuesday is right now. Here's Chris Getz.
Chris, what's the difference now with Brady being a consideration? Just he's expressed an interest. Is that why you've included him in the
Grady is, I mean, he's done a very good job from our evaluation, and we feel like he deserves to be in consideration. I can't say that, he's got a leg up on anyone, because it is going to be a deep process, and we're going to find someone that's the best fit for us, but he deserves to be in the conversation.
Have you changed your mind about anyone else in the organization? Initially, you said it'll be uniformed personnel outside of the White Sox organization.
Yeah, other than Grady, being part of the process, we're still focused mainly outside the organization and someone that's in uniform.
Aside from this being one of 30 manager jobs, which is appealing in and of itself, do you have concerns that you're going to be able to get who you want?
I'm not sure. I'm not concerned at all. The process will take care of itself. We need someone that understands our current situation, is up for the challenge, and there are a lot of people in this game that want to be part of something special, and this is a tremendous opportunity to build something that can make our fans really happy and proud to be. To have the ability to follow the White Sox and back into playoff contention and eventually fight for a World Series.
No, how else to put this, but is this embarrassing for the organization or part of baseball, or how do you look at that?
It's not something we're proud of. There's a myriad of reasons of why we stand here today with the record that we have. And now, with that being said, personally, I view this as a tremendous opportunity to build something. We've identified areas in the organization that need to improve. It's very clear our Major League club has got room for improvement. I've never been energized more than I am now, and I know I can speak for our group. So, is it an embarrassment? We're not proud of this. No one wants to be associated with it, but we're certainly up for the challenge.
Chris, Brady's talked about it. Yohan's talked about it a little bit. Can you just talk about the situation with Yohan, that he's come back but doesn't look like he's going to play, if at all, but not much during the final 9-12 games that he was here?
Yeah, Yohan obviously has been out with an injury for a lengthy amount of time. He's back with our Major League club. He seems to be healthy, but we also want to give opportunities to other guys.
If you lose 100 games a third year in a row, is there a thought about the risk involved in terms of the fan base and the type of effect it would have on them long term, just losing people, right?
Yeah, we've got tremendous appreciation for our fans, and they have shown how passionate they are about the White Sox, maybe more so this year than ever, considering how they've stuck by us. I know that they're frustrated, they're upset, they're pissed, and we understand that. Now, with that being said, it's our job to get us back on track so they can be, once again, proud to be a White Sox fan.
Have there been days where you wake up and go, I can't believe this, this is difficult for me and everybody else? Days harder than others for you?
Yeah, there certainly have been some tough days, but with that being said, I don't have any troubles getting up in the morning. I get excited to come to work each day and try to find ways to either get our Major League club better or future Major League club better.
Chris, if things go according to plan, when do you see this team being in for a playoff spot?
It's tough to say at this point. I mean, we know where we're at from a pitching standpoint. We feel really good about our pitching process, how we acquire players, the certain players that we do acquire. We develop them. We've shown, the success throughout the minor leagues and a little bit at the major league level. You look at our bullpen and some of these younger players that have come up and have gotten tremendous opportunity. I think having flexibility in a bullpen has allowed us to provide more opportunity for players to step up and build their confidence. And I can say the same thing about our starting pitching pitching staff as well. And then you go deeper than that into the minor leagues and Noah Schultz and what he's done this year. We've got Hagen Smith that we just got in the draft. And, you know, certainly, you know, when you think about Garrett Crochet and Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, that speaks to our ability to identify left-handed pitchers that can be successful at the major league level. Now, we know that it's more than just pitching. It's about finding offensive players that can play defense and good base running. So we're not balanced right now, but we know that you know, we've got to focus on some other areas so we can be stronger and more competitive.
Does the journey from with Houston and Baltimore in recent vintage, you know, both teams having lost 103 times in a row, does that resonate with you guys as you're putting together your plan here over the next few years?
It does. I think when you look at those organizations and what they've been through and now they're having success at the major league level, I think those are really strong examples. There's a lot to learn from how they've gone about it, and we're applying that now underneath the organization. So, you know, there's certain blueprints that apply, and we certainly know that those guys, those organizations have made really sound decisions, and I think it can hopefully give excitement for our fans that better days are ahead.
Players always talk about the controllables, and you mentioned this last time, you talked like, you know, it's one thing to lose 105, 110, we wouldn't all be here. What do you attribute the inordinate amount of outfield collisions, mental lapses, or am I just reading, you know, am I thinking there's more than normal? Because it certainly has felt like there's been more than just a talent gap here this year.
Well, we've certainly seen some improvement here, you know, in the last several weeks. You know, the mental lapses have still happened, and there's been errors that perhaps are more mental than physical. I think Grady and the staff have done a nice job addressing that. When we're looking at development, player development at the major league level, we need to find staff members that understand the difference between mental and physical errors, and they need to stay on top of it, hold players accountable, and be very consistent with the expectations and the messaging. You know, so, you know, we certainly want to identify players that have an aptitude to make adjustments and learn at the major league level, and it's important for us to find coaches that can come up with strategies for these players to get better.
Aside from finding the next manager, what are some of those other top offseason priorities that you have?
You know, we're looking at a handful of different processes. We brought in David Keller, who's going to help along with Luis Silverio. They're going to team up on the international side, and we're building out an evaluation and development process with them, with that current group or that the group that we have now. We're looking to improve our analytic group. You know, we've identified areas that need to be more emphasized to allow us to develop players and identify players and acquire players. And that's the focus for this offseason, to continue to build on that.
Does it come with an increased like financial commitment from ownership?
It potentially does, yes.
How frustrating. I mean, you've known this all along, but that you don't get your cap to where you can draft next year. Is this the worst possible time to be the worst team in baseball?
The rules are the rules. And you know, it's our job to find competitive advantages for us. It used to be the ability to pick at the top of the draft, and obviously those rules have changed. I don't spend too much time on, you know, calling the commissioner's office, hoping that they're going to change the rule for us to get the top pick next year. But it's really about going out there, identifying players that we want to bring into our system and develop them properly.
How much has this year been for you and your staff of character building? Obviously, you had good character to get the job originally and the people you brought in, but how much has that taken you another step to meet that personal challenge?
You know, our group, you know, certainly feels the pain that our fans are going, that are feeling right now. Yeah, with that being said, you're looking at a group that, you know, comes into the office every day, that are passionate. We're working together, trying to find ways to build a successful culture and develop processes that allow us to be sustainable for a long time.
Chris, you've been taking a lot of lumps with the media outside of Chicago, nationally. Do you read it? Do you listen to it? Do you care about that at all?
I don't spend too much time on it. I certainly recognize, you know, the current state of the organization. You're going to get negative attention along the way. That comes with the position that I'm in. That comes with the territory of a struggling team. But I more so focus on how to get us better every day, more so than reflecting back on perhaps something that's written about the past.
Chris, one of the issues this year seemed like was, you know, you had a lot of live arms in the bullpen, but not a lot of success out there. A lot of folks say, you guys need to work on the kind of the spin rate, pitch lab type of things to get, to hone the pitchers out of the bullpen.
We've got a pretty good pitching development process, and Brian Bannister came in here to enhance us even further. When it comes to more of the technical parts of pitching, we feel like we're in a really good position, both at the major league level, at the minor league level. When you speak of some of the shortcomings of our bullpen, one thing that has become very apparent more so recently is the flexibility that we have with some of our bullpen arms, and it's allowed us to manage the bullpen much more effectively, and we've gotten better results because of it.
When it comes to the managerial process, I know you mentioned the happy list. Do you have a timeline in mind? What kind of timeline do you have?
We're not rushing into anything. As we reach the end of the season and contact other clubs and working through a permission process, we're going to be able to work at a White Sox pace. Obviously, you're at the mercy of other clubs that potentially are in the playoffs, and you want to respect those situations. You know, for timeline-wise, I would expect, certainly at some point, late October, early November.
A year into your job, any insights gained as to why you're the person to fix it, and is your confidence taken again?
My confidence remains, and I guess you could talk to the staff or front office members or other around the organization about how I show up every day, understanding the challenges that we currently face. But I view this as a very unique, tremendous opportunity for me in my career, along with bringing in staff members that can help us lead us to where we want to go. So I do feel like we're on the right track. I know it hasn't shown up at the major league level, but I'm very confident it will.
As far as major league protocol goes, is it up to the individual teams that could possibly be in the playoffs to allow or not allow you to talk to their personnel before the season ends?
I want to be respectful of other clubs and what they're trying to accomplish in a playoff situation. So we'll be able to work through that. I'm not concerned at all.
Chris, how is it been trying to kind of sell these structural spots like building out analytics or international to Jerry at a time where short-term results are what they are, and selling these as opposed to maybe addressing the immediate problem of the roster?
He's been very, very receptive. You look at some of the clubs that are consistently competing at a high level, and you look at their blueprint, how they're going about it. It's very easy to point to successful organizations and how they're going about their business. And, our current state of our major league club kind of speaks to the work that we have in front of us. But once again, I'm very proud of the group that we've been able to bring in here in the last year. And every day we're working together to find ways to create competitive advantages.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz and his comments to White Sox beat reporters prior to the series against the Angels, the final home series of the year this past Tuesday. When we come back, one of the successes of the White Sox farm system were the Birmingham Barons this year. They won the Southern League Championship. They were maybe the best team in all of minor league baseball in the first half of the minor league schedule. They graduated a whole bunch of players, a lot of whom have come up to the White Sox this year and still won a Southern League Championship. We'll kind of describe how that process goes and hear from the manager of the Birmingham Barons, Sergio Santos, former White Sox closer, former minor league shortstop as well, when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Well, Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We got a ball game coming up in just a little bit. A 12-10 start for the White Sox and Tigers. Second to last game of the season. Tigers clinched a playoff spot with a 4-1 win over the White Sox last night. And the White Sox went to 39-121 on the year. The most losses in the modern era. We'll get the pregame show rather at 11:30, and we'll get into the minor leagues here on White Sox Weekly. Sergio Santos, who was the closer for the White Sox in 2010 and 2011, or at least had some chances in those two seasons before getting traded away from the White Sox, was a real fun guy to talk with. I was covering some of those teams as a reporter for another shop back in those days. He was a converted shortstop into the pitching side of things, had a very good slider, had 30 saves for the White Sox in 2011 before going on to play for the Blue Jays, the Dodgers, and the Yankees. Had a good run, brief though it was, as a reliever, and is now managing. He was in the New York Yankees minor league system as a manager and won, I believe, the High A championship two seasons ago. This year with the Birmingham Barons, he had the best team in the minor leagues through the first half of the season. Guys like Brooks Baldwin and Drew Thorpe and Kai Bush and Jairo Iriarte. The pitching staff was absolutely unbelievable. And most of those guys have come up to the major leagues in this season with the White Sox. And the way it works in the minors is if you win the first half, they split the season into two halves. And the best record in the first half of the season secures a playoff bid. You go to the playoffs regardless of what happens in the second half. And the reasons for that, I think, are pretty obvious to you, right? The minor leagues are for development. And as those players who play really well in the first half of a double-A season are trying to do, they get moved up either to triple-A or, in the case of a guy like Brian Ramos or Drew Thorpe, they get moved up from double-A to the big leagues. You're kind of one step away from the bigs if you're in double A these days. And it's, you know, a really difficult thing, can be, for an organization, for a team, I guess, in an organization that's promoting prospects to get your minor league season back on track in that second half. It is often the case that the number one seed or the best team in the first half of the season isn't winning even the first round of the playoffs because that team is so drastically different than a second half team who maybe saw a lot of players come up from A or high A into the double A run and, you know, who are on, you know, their high end of the development track as opposed to players who might be, you know, kind of for the first time figuring out double A. Well, Santos was able, and his staff, his hitting coaches, his pitching coaches, were Nicky Delmonico and John Eli, the pitching coach and hitting coach respectively, were able to navigate a lot of that this last year and won a Southern League title. Santos talked with White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week, and we clipped a couple of things. Santos just kind of recapped that run in double-A this year and the Barons winning a championship.
From the start of the season, you know, we had a team, and they did incredible. They did everything us as, you know, people in player development do. They developed, they got better, and they moved on up. And then, you know, the challenging thing was getting so many new players, but they were great when they came in. Also, they bought into the messaging and what the culture of the clubhouse was, and they kind of hit the ground running. And and we finished it up, which is, you know, which is awesome. And it's great for, I think, Chicago White Sox fans, again, to be excited about, you know, what we have coming.
What does a minor league title mean to these guys who are developing and learning and could be part of the next, you know, successful White Sox team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I said it in earlier interviews, right? Like, again, player development is what's most important. But whenever you get yourself into playoffs or in positions to win championships, you know, the experience they gained to me is invaluable. And it's something that they'll take with them when they get to the big leagues. And if they, you know, make it to the playoffs or if it's a wild card game or World Series, whatever it is, that same, you know, either anxiousness, excitement, everything that it entails being in a playoff game, you know, it's kind of going to be, they've been there, they've done that. The guys that did well, I mean, they're going to continue to do it. And guys that say didn't play as well as they wanted, well, now it's something they can learn from if they ever get in that position again.
Santos's team got through the first round. There was a little bit of drama in that first round of the playoffs, and then went on to play the Montgomery Biscuits, who had overall, I believe, the best record in Double A. It was a tight series, and you know, just hearing Santos talk about the trial of that Montgomery series is pretty incredible. Here he is.
And then we face Montgomery, who has been amazing, you know, all year, and the prospects they have are great players. And so we go into their place, win game one decisively. And then, so there was just a feeling prior to game two, obviously with the weather coming, we wanted to finish it in game two, and we scored in the bottom of the first, and then it was all the way to the ninth. And then when they tied the game in the ninth, you know, believe it or not, it, you know, I like to take in everything that's happening in the dugout, and not one face was down, shoulder down. It was kind of a quiet confidence. If these guys were nervous, they did a pretty damn good job of not showing it, because there was just this resiliency, this grit that this team has had all year. And I remember looking at Nicky DeMonico and John Eli, and I said, guys, like, you know, because you could see the nervousness on their face, and I said, we're winning this game. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to win the game. And so, like I said, just a great experience for these guys to be in just such a high pressure, you know, high leverage moment, and these guys kind of coming through was awesome.
So not only do players in situations like that kind of get to cut their teeth with playoff pressure and needing to perform and all that kind of stuff, but the coaching staff has to do the same, right? In a season that is all about player development up until the playoffs, the switch has to flip. Those managers who are often chosen for their ability to, you know, to coach players and get them to understand the finer points of the game or learn this or learn that, you know, they go to a different mode. And Santos talked about getting that call from Paul Janish, who's in charge of the farm system for the White Sox, and letting him know that the job just changed. Go get him.
During the season, it was, hey, player development first. You know, this is our time to get these guys better. But as soon as we went into playoffs, Paul Janish gives me a phone call, and he says, hey, you know, player development's kind of out the window. Like, we want to play to win. So do everything you need to do. And so that's where we made defensive substitutions late in games. I mean, pinch run, all the things we, you know, we would do at a major league level to try to win a game. And so it makes it a lot more fun from my seat, because it's kind of like, all right, we're in it to win it. And that's all that matters.
So that's a whole lot of experience that Santos and his coaching staff and those players, both in the first half and second half of the Double A season, gained. And he was asked point blank, I believe, by MLB.com's Scott Merkin, if memory serves, whether or not he wanted to be considered for the open managerial spot with the White Sox, and Santos didn't flinch.
Yeah, you know, I reached out to Chris, and I just expressed my interest in it. But as he's told all of you guys and everybody else, they have a process. You know, Chris is very methodical and forward thinking in the way he goes about his business. And so all I can do is just say, hey, look, I'm interested in the job. I would love to have it. You know, it's a great organization that I would love to be at the helm of. But I understand there's a bigger thing to it. And so he assured me like the process is going to go through. And I just hope I'm fortunate enough to be considered. I think that would be an honor in itself.
You kind of know the organization a couple different ways too, managing the young players, but also having played here, granted different people to some extent here now, but you do have a knowledge of the White Sox.
I do. So some of my fondest memories, like I said, were 2010 and 11. If I'm not mistaken, I believe we won that series against the Cubs both those years, and just the pride in the city, I'd like to get that back. I know they can. And having managed the prospects that are coming up, I know this season has been extremely difficult for the fans of Chicago, but there is a very bright spot at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we got some guys that with a little bit of experience, I think can really turn it around.
That's Birmingham Barons manager Sergio Santos speaking with reporters earlier this week. Congrats to the Barons on the Southern League Championship. We'll tell you what we got planned for White Sox Weekly when we come back here in just 10 seconds. We'll pause for station identification on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. So as Santos was talking about the coaching staff having developed players in Double A, We've got his boss, Paul Janisch, talking about some of the players that have been developed this year and the offseason plans for some of the most exciting prospects in the White Sox system. You'll hear from him when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Talking a little bit about the minors here on White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Tigers coming up with the second-to-last Major League game of the season. Sox lost to the Tigers last night 4-1. 39-121 are the White Sox. The Tigers are headed to the postseason by way of a wild card berth, and their whole second half has been pretty wild. They've had the best record in baseball since the middle of August, going 31-11 after last night's win. Maybe they've got a little bit of a hangover after a well-deserved celebration last night. We'll see. Ball game's coming up at 12:10. Pre-game show in just about 25 minutes or so. Minor league director Paul Janisch spoke with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week. And as so much of the focus for the White Sox is on the future, a lot of the conversation this offseason will have to be about the guys that are in the minors now, but could be providing a whole lot to the White Sox major league team in the future. We just heard from White Sox or Birmingham manager Sergio Santos in the prior segment, and Janisch talked a little bit about that Birmingham championship run as well. Here's his initial take on just kind of what that Birmingham team was able to accomplish. And after this, you'll hear what White Sox fans could take away from the Birmingham title.
I'm really proud of that staff. Really happy and proud of those players. You guys know this as well as I do, but there's been a lot of turnover on that roster throughout the season. You know, arguably one of the best AA teams in baseball the first half of the season, in large part due to the pitching and defense for that matter. But, you know, there was a ton of turnover on that roster. You know, they kind of went through a little bit of a stretch early in the second half of the season offensively where the team as a whole was struggling. And really, like, I don't know what, you know, what word we want to use, grit, you know, some of those kinds of things. Like, if you look up and down that roster, you know, relative to the Montgomery team, who give them a ton of credit because that's a talented team. They had a good year. The Tennessee team obviously won a bunch of games, had a bunch of, you know, guys on that team that are going to play in the big leagues. So I just give a ton of credit to the players and the staff for just wanting it, you know, wanting it more and continuing to promote, like, you know, what we're saying in terms of winning, you know, the minor leagues is not all about winning. We get it. But it's, you know, shake hands development, so to speak. It's part of it. And I think with regards to expectation, it's important to say those things out loud. And that Birmingham club is very representative of that exact thing. And let's not lose sight of the Kannapolis team as well, right? They lost in the championship game. It was raining, doubleheader. Anything could have happened there. They ran into, you know, a really good arm from the Nationals organization. So, we're just trying to continue to promote that from a philosophic standpoint that, you know, just continue to do winning things, you know, whether you're a pitcher, whether you're a position player, catcher, infielder, outfielder, whatever, like we just want our guys doing winning things over and over again.
That's White Sox farm director Paul Janisch. The follow-up question is, what can White Sox fans at the major league level take away from what Birmingham was able to accomplish this year?
I think, you know, at a time when, you know, there are a lot of publicity has been maybe not the most positive relative to the major league team. So, you know, if you're a White Sox fan and you're looking down, you know, into the future and obviously seeing Birmingham win the championship, I referenced Kannapolis, like, you know, there's things to look to that point to the future that are going to contribute to the major league team. Like there's no doubt about it. You know, I've always kind of been a believer in, the AA level will tell you a lot about an organization, and in particular, you know, what's to come in the next year or two, potentially, to the major league level, that is. And I don't think this is any different. You know, did some of our guys maybe get to the big leagues a little sooner than they would have thought based on the circumstances of the major league team? Sure. But so my message would be, you know, kind of ours, you know, on the player development side in the minor leagues is one of opportunity and hope. You know, that's what we're in a situation where, you know, if you're in the minor leagues with us right now and you play well, you're going to get an opportunity. And I think that's from a fan standpoint, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at guys that are hungry and that are, you know, wanting to take advantage of an opportunity.
One of the guys not at Birmingham this year, Colson Montgomery, one of the top hitting prospects in the White Sox organization, Edgar Caro, now making moves to get up there himself, had a tough season this year. Still finished that season strong, and whether Montgomery is going to be the opening day shortstop for the White Sox or at some point during next season playing a lot of baseball there is yet unknown, but Yanish talked about what that strong start for Colson Montgomery means.
Yeah, ultimately we did have a little discussion, you know, about that time frame, and you know, I think the best way to say it is the aspiration was really just to help him free up, right? Like, Colson's talented, we all know that. You know, he was struggling. I think, you know, he internalized some things with regards to frustration, and it was kind of snowballed on him at the end of the day. He was frustrated, irritated, mad, whatever you want to say. And that was the aspiration there. We looped in some of his support team as well. And just in an effort to make sure we all know, look, we're all on the same page here. We all want Colson to play well. And again, I give Colson credit because he was open to it and he embraced it. And then honestly, he applied it, you know, towards the end of the season. It was better down the stretch. Hit some homers, got back into the middle of the field. And even in talking to him, which I'm sure some of you guys have or will do, I think he would be open with you as well with regards to feeling freer, you know, in the box again, feeling more athletic, feeling more dangerous, et cetera.
Montgomery's last month of the season, September, he hit .264, had a .357 on base percentage, and slugged .458. By far his best month in the minors. Four homers, 13 RBI for Montgomery, 24 strikeouts and 10 walks, all totals that were a lot better than previous months. And yeah, always we say don't scout the stat line, but when you're talking about a particular area, it's probably good to get the specifics out there as well. Particular time frame, good to get the specifics out there. Edgar Caro is on the taxi squad for the White Sox right now. And depending on where you look, the top hitting prospect in the organization alongside Colson Montgomery, he was unbelievably good all year long at Triple A. Some bumps in the road, but for the most part, didn't have a whole lot of struggles at the plate. Did deal with a back issue that put him on the injured list in the early part of last part of August into the early part of September, I think. Otherwise, we might have seen Edgar Caro called up to the big league team to play as opposed to just being on the taxi squad. But Yanish said there's things for him to learn on this while on the taxi squad.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things on Edgar. He's had a great year, as we all know. I think a couple of things, a little bit of a reward, number one, I think is ultimately what that comes down to. I am a believer in exposure to that level is significant. Even just the optics, right? Like, I just think that plays a significant role in this current landscape of like social media exposure, whatever. Like, I think we forget at times that there's an adjustment to be made going to the major league level. So I think it's going to prove, you know, significant for him to have been there and seen some of the stuff, you know, assuming health, we're all hopeful that Edgar's going to become a very good major league player. And so, yeah, that would be my takeaway from that is just giving him the opportunity to be there, see it, feel it, touch it, so to speak. And it's only going to help him.
Big question about Caro asked to Yanish is how far is he from being major league ready?
Yeah, I mean, he's got himself on that radar, right? Like, it's now it's just waiting for the circumstances, stars to align, so to speak, for him to be the next guy up. And but he's on the radar, man. Like, from a development standpoint, is he done? No. Like, there's some things that Edgar would tell you himself. He needs to continue to get his body into better shape so that he can endure a full season and some of those kinds of things. But from an ability standpoint, from a mental capacity standpoint, like, he's as close as you can hope for a player to be, in my opinion. Now, there's nothing promised to any of them, right? Like, he's got to have a good offseason. He's got to show up. He's got to be healthy and do all those things going into next year. But he couldn't have done more with what he had available to him this year, in my opinion, to be more ready to go to the big leagues.
With Edgar, we've heard a lot about his bat and see the numbers. How would you evaluate his catching and defense ability?
Yeah, I've said this a couple of times. I do think it's he works at it, right? Which is what is encouraging to me. Like, is he perfect? Is he completely ready to, you know, be as good as he can be defensively. And when I say that, like, there's a, at that position, there's more than just catching it and throwing it, right? Like, there's a game planning element that is significant, right? And so, does he need to continue to work on defense? Yes. You know, can he get, you know, quicker and, you know, the arm strength can get a little bit better? Sure. But like, he's, I believe like the defensive ability and the makeup is what's going to give him the opportunity to play at the major league level. And at that position, give him the opportunity, hopefully to, you know, to become an offensive player, you know, relative to his position. And it's, that's asking a lot for a young guy, you know, to go up there and catch and manage what we can all agree is going to be, in all likelihood, a fairly young staff at some point. And oh, by the way, like go be a productive offensive player, have good at bats from both sides of the plate and, you know, adjust to pitchers you've never seen before and some of those kinds of things. But so the thing that encourages me about Edgar is his work ethic, his understanding that he's not done yet is what I would say relative to the defensive stuff.
One more from Yanish here, and it concerns literally the biggest pitching prospect in the White Sox organization, Noah Schultz, the lefty who goes 6'9". He had stretches of being absolutely unhittable this year. He was 0-4, but for the most part was only throwing 4 innings. So if anybody got anything against him and there was a good pitching performance on the other side, you know, Schultz is going to take that loss. He wasn't around to earn a whole lot of wins, and that's part of why the win at 4 pitchers is much more irrelevant now than it ever has been before. Anyway, a 2.24 ERA in 23 starts, 88 and a third innings, 115 strikeouts in those 88 and a third, and a whip, that's walks and hits per innings pitched, of 0.98 for Noah Schultz. Depending on where you look, Schultz is the best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball and rated by some organizations, some ranking systems, as the best pitching prospect in all of baseball. Now, there are some concerns. At 6'9", there aren't a lot of, I mean, hardly any guys that size that have reached the bigs and stayed. Obviously, Randy Johnson was able to do that. And he's drawn comps to the big unit just because of his size, the left-handedness, the funky arm angle, the whole thing. Schultz was, I think the next step for him is, well, we'll let Polyanish talk about it some, about his offseason plan, but I think the next step for him is kind of taking the restrictor plate off and letting him get deep into starts, whether that's going to be a AA or AAA this year. This coming year, rather, is probably going to be decided as they go. But here's Paul Janisch on the offseason plan for Noah Schultz.
Look, guys, the year could not have gone much better for Noah. You know, we had a plan in place. And again, I highlight the pitching department. You know, Brian Bannister at the top, obviously, but Matt Zaleski and our entire pitching department on the PD side, man, it's, they had a plan in place that we executed that worked out, you know. And so going into the offseason, Noah just needs to continue to get stronger. I mean, believe it or not, guys, like he grew this year, right? Like he physically got taller. So he's added weight. He's going to continue to do so. He's got a unique build. He's long, and he needs to continue to kind of fortify that system and get physically stronger. I mean, the baseball side is pretty dang good, man. But fortifying him in a way that makes him, you know, even more able to endure a full season with the amount of innings we're going to ask him to throw is what that's about. But he's got his mind right. He's going to be out here in Arizona for the off season. So get him out of the cold and get him into a warm place to train.
That's White Sox farm system director Paul Janisch talking about Noah Schultz there. It's stunning. Yeah, Schultz would have finished his sophomore season at Vanderbilt at this point had he decided to go the college route, but instead he's in the White Sox minor league system and absolutely handling everybody that comes up to bat against him. So from that to the end of White Sox Weekly, we'll get you all set for the some playoff headlines for the ball game coming up against the Tigers and the pregame show at 11:30. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly, final show of the regular season. We'll have another 2-hour show next Saturday, wrapping up the whole thing and Looking ahead to the offseason, seeing what's going to happen. We'll move to a one-hour show after next weekend's episode. Looking forward to having you all offseason here on White Sox Weekly. And thanks so much for listening all season long. If you missed part of the show, if you caught the tail end of White Sox general manager Chris Getz and his comments to White Sox beat reporters, or the Sergio Santos stuff, or the Paul Janisch stuff, you could download the ESPN Chicago app. Every episode of White Sox Weekly is right there on the app. You can download it and take it with you, share it with your friends, the whole thing. It's all there like any good modern radio station. We've got an app, and it works really well. We love it. There are some things to play for here in the final 2 days of the regular season. Obviously, you've seen highlights. You've seen footage, I would imagine, of Hurricane Helene and the flooding that has gone on all throughout Florida and Georgia and North Carolina. Man, it's been some serious stuff, and there have been folks who have lost their lives in the span of things. Obviously, playoff games in a baseball season aren't all that important. However, that weather system has impacted the playoffs. The Mets and Braves will play a doubleheader on Monday, and it will decide, I think, part of that NL wildcard spot. Right now, if the season were to end, the AL side of the bracket is all set. The Tigers will play the Orioles. The Tigers are the 5 seed, the Orioles the 4 seed. The 6 seed are the Kansas City Royals. They'll play the Astros in the first round, the wild card round. The Guardians, by way of the second best record in the American League, have a bye, and the Yankees do too. The Yankees will play the winner of that Orioles-Tigers series. The Guardians will play the winner of that Royals-Astros series. So it's entirely possible that we could have divisional matchups in the ALDS if the Royals beat the Astros and the Orioles beat the Tigers. It would be your AL East versus AL Central ALDSs. Then, right now, if it all ended today, the Mets would be the 6 seed against the Brewers. The Braves would be the 5 seed against the Padres in the wild card round. The Phillies await the winner of Mets-Brewers. The Dodgers are waiting for the winner of the Padres-Braves series. But again, the Diamondbacks have a little bit to say yet. They're still alive. There will be, you know, the Diamondbacks could get themselves in by way of the Braves and Mets own the tiebreaker over the Diamondbacks. So they've got more work to do here in the last 2 days of the season. They've got to get wins is essentially what it's got to be. It confuses even me, especially with the scheduling changes due to the hurricane in Florida. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. An enormous thank you to Jack McGrath and Brendan Riley, our producers. We've got the pregame show for the White Sox and Tigers coming up in just a couple of minutes. First pitch at 12:10, so don't go anywhere. We got you all afternoon on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.